Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Hey, good morning and welcome to the show. I'm Harry Miller.
I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two of the attorneys with the Herzog Law Firm. We are conveniently located at four different locations. Our main office is in Albany at Corporate Woods. We also have offices in Saratoga Springs, Clifton Park, and Kingston, New York. And we are here each Saturday morning, some combination of the estate planning group, to talk to you, give you some, hopefully some interesting and helpful information about estate planning and elder law, asset protection planning, advanced directives like healthcare proxies, powers of attorney. And we would love to have you call us this morning at the station. You can be our first caller by calling us at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. So good morning, Debbie. Happy 4th of July.
Good morning, Harry. Happy 4th of July. It looks like today is going to be kind of a ugh day, but it looks like it might clear up a little bit for the weekend.
Sunday. Monday didn't look too bad. Monday looks like the best day of the weekend, which is actually, well, it's not the 4th, but it's the holiday 4th. So, you know, are you having fireworks up in Saratoga, I guess? I mean, considering where we were last year at the 4th of July, which we were all, you know, locked in our houses, there were no fireworks at the Empire State Plaza. There was no, there were no parades, no celebrations. And, you know, I don't even know if you could have people over to your house for a barbecue, but... But it is nice, and I don't know. Have you noticed the crowds in places recently?
Oh my gosh, the traffic has been awful in Saratoga.
Traffic is awful. Gas prices, I guess, are at an all time high for the last 7 years. my wife actually just flew back on Thursday from North Carolina. She had to be down in North Carolina for something or other, and she flew in on Southwest the other day. I guess it was Thursday afternoon. And I mean, I picked her up at the airport. The airport was jammed. She said the flight was absolutely. She said, if I don't get the Delta variant from this flight, she said, I know my vaccine is good to keep me immune. But crowds everywhere. People are like they're like crazed getting out, and yeah, the traffic is something else. Anyway,
Harry, yeah. Debbie, we have our first caller this morning. We have Aaron from Schenectady.
Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning. Hi. I have a question. My brother and I inherited a house from my parents, and we're selling it this fall. And I have been told, I don't know if that's true or not, that we would have to pay taxes on the amount that the house has the change in the amount of the house from the time we inherited it to the time we sell it. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Unless you live in it and it's your principal residence. So
no, I'm renting it.
Right, but so what would happen is, I'm assuming the house was in joint names with your parents.
It was a life estate. Yes.
Well, if it was a life estate, you mean your parents had a life estate in the house and you and your brother owned it?
Yes, and then they passed away about in 2015.
All right, so what you would do, they both passed, whenever the last one passed away, you would use whatever for capital gains tax purposes, you would use the fair market value of the house as of the date of the death of the last of your parents, okay, without regard to whatever they paid for it way back when. So if it was worth $200,000 when they died and you're selling it for $250,000, your long-term capital gain for you and your brother would be $50,000, okay? And then you would each split it. and pay tax. But you don't have to go back to like when your parents bought it. Like if they owned it for 30 years and they only bought it for like $80,000, and when they died it was worth $200,000, you get, when someone passes away, the person who inherits the property gets what's called a step-up in basis. That's your tax basis. And so, and it doesn't matter if it's a piece of real estate or a share of stock. You value all of a deceased person's assets as of the date of their death, without regard to what they paid for them originally. Does that make sense?
Well, yes. Luckily, I work in a real estate office, so I can go back to 2015 and pull up comps. From 2015.
I would do that. I would look at, I mean, you can look at what the assessed value was in the tax bills, but those numbers are usually usually on the low side as far as fair market value. Or if you have somebody who could go back and say, yeah, look at the comps, and as of this date, as of the date my mom died, the house was worth X number of dollars, then that's your cost basis, okay? And it would be even nice. It would be nice if you could get the realtor to do, like, just a little letter so you had something in writing in case you ever got audited by the tax people. I mean, it's highly unlikely you would, but it could happen. And then next year on your tax return, if you own half and your brother owns half, you would just split the gain. You report half of it on your tax, and he'd report the other half on his. And that's it on Schedule D, which is long-term capital gains. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you have a tax preparer? Do you have an accountant or a tax preparer?
I do because I own a business. I have a tax preparer.
Oh, yeah. So they should know how to do that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, I guess my next question is that considered a special tax, or is that added into your income?
Well, long-term capital gains tax is actually, as far as taxes go, it's the best tax you can have, all right, because long-term capital gains tax rates are lower than individual tax rates that you pay on income and dividends and interest. And so the highest tax on long-term capital gains is 20%, all right? And so if the gain was $50,000, 20% of that would be $10,000. Now let me tell you, ma'am, you won't be in the 20% tax bracket for capital gains taxes unless your taxable income is more than $425,000. Okay.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right.
So if it is, you are. If it's not, you're going to either be in a 10 or 15% tax bracket for capital gains. So the tax you pay is going to be far less than if you had to take it in as ordinary income.
Okay, so I was saying, how much do I have to hold aside for the taxes next year? I didn't really know.
I can't tell you that. You're going to have to talk to your accountant about that. Your accountant should be able to estimate what amount of taxes it is based on your income from last year, assuming next year is going to be about the same. Okay.
That answers my question. Thank you.
I mean, really, it's not a bad. It's not, if you got to pay taxes, the best tax is a long-term capital gains tax, absolutely. Because income tax, ordinary income taxes are in a 36% tax bracket, right? So it's almost half of what ordinary income, the highest tax bracket for that is. Okay.
Okay. All right, thank
Super.
You.
Well, hey, have a great 4th of July weekend, and don't worry about the taxes, all right?
All right. Okay.
Thank you, ma'am.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Take care.
So, Harry, I wanted to mention, well, we probably should give him the phone number before I mention the client webinar, which I'm going to go into in just a minute, but if you want to be our second caller, the phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Now, because we were just talking about taxes is what brought it to mind, we're actually going to have our client appreciation webinar, which is going to be July 15th at 10 a.m. And those of you that usually get our invitation via snail mail, we're not sending out snail mail invitations. We're actually sending it out via email. So if you don't get our newsletters, you're not on our email list, you need to give us a call at the office, and Stacy can give you the link to the webinar. But at the webinar, we're going to be talking about, well, celebrating 75 years. Herzog's 75 years old. We're going to follow up on community Medicaid because there's some changes coming down the pike. The new power of attorney and the potential implications of President Biden's tax plan. So it's going to be a page turner. But anyway, and real estate trust. So those of you that are listening that are clients of ours, be looking for that email. It should come out this week. If you don't get it, make sure you check your spam folder because a lot of my stuff's been going to spam. And if you don't get it, then give Stacy a call at the office. Actually, Stacy's on vacation next week, but give us a call at the office and we can give you the link to the webinar.
Debbie, Harry, we have another caller. We have Charles in Colony.
Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Charles. Hello.
Hi there. You're on the air.
Hey, great. So I've listened to your morning show before, and I have a question related to a trust.
Okay.
And as I understand it, you can put a house in a trust, but you can't put IRAs. So
that's correct.
Let's say you have a younger child, how do you protect them from getting access to money in an IRA should you die? Because if you had an 18 or 20-year-old, you don't want them to get all the money at one time.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
It's a tough question. I was going to say, that's a hard question. And first off, you should never make anyone that's under 18 a beneficiary of an IRA or a retirement account because it has its own issues, let alone giving them money at that age. But the problem with anyone that's under 18, if they inherit an IRA or a retirement account, we have to have a guardian appointed. Even if they have parents, you know, grandparents, whatever, we still have to have a guardian appointed before they can get that money. And really the only way to keep that kind of money away so that they can't spend it is an IRA trust. But what you need to understand is they're going to have to take it over a 10-year distribution anyway. It's told, like, in other words, if you inherit an IRA and you're 18 but you're in college, the time period doesn't start to run until that person gets out of school, right? So that 10 years doesn't start until they're out of college. But still, once that 10-year period starts, the person has to take the distribution within 10 years. Whether they take it in one lump sum or they stretch it over the 10 years, they have to take that money within 10 years.
Right. It cannot be
rolled into another IRA for them.
Not anymore, no. Here's what I've been doing recently, because you're not the only person who's encountered this problem. With the IRA trust, and the reason we're using more IRA trusts is because about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, the Congress and the President signed a bill called the Secure Act. And it now forces an inherited IRA. So if you have a spouse and you die, your spouse can roll your IRA into his or her IRA and use their life expectancy to take out the money. Your kids used to be able to do that, but not anymore. Now, when you die and the IRA goes to your kids, they're the beneficiaries, they have to take the money out within 10 years of your death, okay? Unless, as Debbie said, unless they're under 18 or they're disabled, there's a few other exceptions. So we put the money now in the IRA trust to protect it from the kid. Now, one thing I've started doing for people like you who are concerned about your... So between 18 and 28 years, let's say you got $500,000 or $1 million in your IRA, that's a boatload of money to put in a kid's pocket between ages 18 and 28, when they may not be the most responsible citizens as far as money is concerned. So one thing we can do inside the IRA, we can have the money spread out over 10 years coming out of the IRA. But inside the IRA trust, I have started putting in a further trust that the net after-tax IRA money could go into and still be held in the trust for the kid until they're a little older. Now, normally we're only going to do that for a large amount of money in an IRA. I mean, if you only have $100,000 in your IRA and we spread it out, take out $10,000 a year, you know, it's not that difficult. What the IRA trust does, even for the 10-year payout, it allows you to spread the IRA over 10 years. In other words, and take it out in equal or nearly equal installments between the kids age 18 and 28. If you read statistics about inherited IRAs that you get from parents, the vast majority of them are cleaned out, closed out, and completely liquidated within 2 years of the parent's death. The view of a lot of millennial kids these days is, you know, well, you know, it's $300,000 in the IRA, so I got to pay 35% or 40% taxes on it. You know, it's 120 grand. I still got 180 after taxes. So what's the big deal? You know, those of us who are probably older, perhaps wiser, or perhaps a little more concerned about tax consequences than some other folks are, you know, would really spreading it out over 10 years is going to result in far lower tax payment than if you take it out in a lump sum and get forced into a much higher tax bracket. Does that make sense?
Yes. So
these things are complicated. These IRA trusts are fairly complicated, but they do achieve the trick of sheltering the money, the tax money,
right.
for your kids. And you know the thing about it is, if you're like most of us, not all your kids are exactly alike. So you can set up a single trust that would go into, you know, multiple trusts down the road. And maybe your daughter doesn't need to have an IRA trust for 10 years. She's a perfectly responsible financially. You know, she's an accountant or whatever. And maybe your son, you know, is a little less, likes to live large and is a little less savings conscious about money. So you could set it up in a way where the one child has less restrictions than the other, okay? So now the second, perhaps the even more complicated issue about these IRA trusts is who the heck is going to be the trustee? Okay.
Right.
Do you want your daughter to be your son's trustee? Okay, because every time he wants something and she says no, now you're going to create a potential, you know, adversarial, argumentative situation within the family. So these are difficult decisions for people. And I think, you know, one of the things we try to do in our law firm is when people like you come in and sit down for an appointment to look at these things and think about maybe seriously doing this kind of a trust, we really want you to understand the not just the legal aspects of what you're doing or the tax aspects of what you're doing, but the family dynamics of what you're setting up, because you may be creating a disaster that isn't worth it, or maybe someone else can act as a trustee who's more of a neutral party within the family, you know, who everybody likes and respects. So those are kind of things we talk to our folks about when we're doing estate planning.
Great. I have one more question based on what you just told me. So this IRA trust, that would go in a regular trust?
The IRA trust, at least the ones that we do, the IRA trust is solely to hold, and let me say this, your IRA doesn't go in the trust. As Debbie said early on when you called in, you can't put an IRA in a trust without liquidating it and paying the tax on it. No one, we would never advise you to do that, and you wouldn't do that. An IRA trust is basically a revocable trust that you set up, you're the trustee of, and you're the sole beneficiary. And what happens is you name your revocable trust as the beneficiary of your IRA. So it's not in the trust. It's merely the beneficiary of your IRA instead of your kids individually. So that way, first of all, you have complete control of it while you're alive. It doesn't affect your ability to take out your RMDs or you know, invade the trust and use the money for you, your spouse, or whatever. So it only kicks in when you die. Now the trustee of your IRA trust starts collecting the IRA money. It stays in the IRA. Okay, so, and then we take it out over the 10-year period. So let's say we got a $100,000 distribution and we had to pay $25,000 of taxes. That would still have to be done. We still have to take the money out for the child. But the net amount, the net after tax amount, $75,000, could then be put in a further trust that's inside your IRA trust for the son who doesn't know how to manage money or is going to go out and have a big party for all of his friends. Okay?
Yeah.
So the thing is, if you want to come in, we got to sit down and talk about it because it's too much to talk about on the radio, you know. I mean, I could go on for an hour, and that would be boring. But you get the gist of it. It's complicated, but you get the gist of it. My point is just to get you the gist of how it can work, and it works very well. You know.
Right. Because I've heard y'all say before that you cannot put IRAs in a regular trust. So I'll go back to my original question. What can you put besides a house in a regular trust?
Just about anything, right, Deb?
Right. There's lots of different items you can put into a trust. You can put stocks, bonds, money market accounts, CDs. The only thing we tell you not to put into, and we're talking an irrevocable trust, is your walking around money, right? So it's not like you can't get it back out, but the money that you're going to use to buy a new car, put a roof on your house, that's money you want to leave outside the trust. But any other type of banking accounts or brokerage accounts that's not a tax-deferred account can go into a trust. You can even put your life insurance. You can make your the trust the owner of your life insurance to get that cash value protected on your life insurance.
And you can still...
Yeah, absolutely.
And all this stuff that you've put in your trust, you can still get it back out if you need to.
You can by doing a partial...
Go ahead, yeah.
You could do it by doing what's called a partial revocation so that if you wanted to chip off a piece of the trust, I always say it's like a piggy bank, right? If you need to get some money out of the trust, you can do a partial revocation, kind of open the bottom of the piggy bank, shake some money out, put the cork back in the piggy bank, and then the trust assets are still protected, but what's out is out. And to do a partial revocation, you have to have yourself as the settlor sign off, the trustee sign off, and the beneficiary sign off. But the way our trusts are set up, you can change the trustee or beneficiary anytime you want to. So if the kids make you angry, they're out. You just find somebody to do it for you.
Yeah, our trust, and let me say this, not all law firms who do these trusts draft them with the kind of... leaving the kind of flexibility and powers that we do. We give you as much power and control indirectly over the trust assets and the trust beneficiaries as we can while still protecting your assets so they're not considered available resources if you have to use them for Medicaid nursing home purposes. So we've been doing this stuff for 40 years. And the Medicaid trust, the firm, as Debbie said earlier on, the firm's been in business for 75 years. And this is our, this is our 75th anniversary of the founding of the law firm. So we do it a long time. We have a lot of experience in trust drafting and things like that. And so I think the wonderful thing about trust is there has for many years been a sort of this conventional wisdom that trusts are just for really wealthy people. And I think what we've tried to do over the last 10, 15 years or so is to point out to average middle-class people that trusts can be a wonderful vehicle for solving a lot of different family problems. If we have a kid who's disabled, if we have a kid who just is in a bad marriage or maybe has a substance abuse issue with drugs or alcohol, we can use a trust very inexpensively. You know, we're not using banks and institutional people as trustees here. And so they can solve a lot of family problems that you lay awake at night and worry about, okay? And that's a great thing about, and just talking about, every family... Every family has their own, their own issues that they try to kind of keep quiet and nobody likes to talk about. But it's important when you come in and talk to us or whoever your estate planning lawyer is that we know about all these things so we can really design the best comprehensive estate plan that really fits for your family. These aren't cookie cutter estate plans.
Great. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
You too.
And we have another caller. We have Alex in Saratoga.
Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, and how are you?
Good. How are you doing? What can we help you with?
Okay, I just have a quick question. My husband died a few months ago, and we have two cars, and they're older cars. One is registered in his name, and he has title. The other is registered in my name, but I was just checking. He has title to it. I understand that you have 3 years to transfer without cost one car into title. But what should I do with the other car? I don't even know whether it'll last another 3 years. So
you've got two cars. I just want to repeat and make sure I'm answering this correct. Yes. So you got two cars. One car is individually in his name, and the other car is joint between the two of you?
No, it's just in my name. I mean,
okay,
it's registered to you, but the title's in his name. Yeah,
correct.
They're both in his name. Yeah.
So generally what happens, I mean, the rule for estate administration is you can transfer one car.
Correct.
Without having to go through probate. So with two cars, and you said they're older, so what's their kind
of
the value that you have?
Their value is about $1,000.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't know whether it's worth going to probate. I mean, you know, and well, I should just, you know, for 3 years, just let it die or even donate it.
Well, you can do a short. What county do you live in, ma'am?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Which county do you live in? I mean, Albany County?
No.
Saratoga. So you should be able to do like a short form simplified probate proceeding in Saratoga Surrogates Court. I think it costs like $1 to file the paper. And get appointed executor. Does your husband have a will that names you as executor?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, so instead of going through a full-blown court, you know, there's a simplified procedure. You could probably get the forms online, or you could get them from the clerk's office, maybe. You might be able to fill them out yourself and file it with a will. And then the court will give you a piece of paper called, you know, letters testamentary. It says you're the executor of your husband's estate. Then you can go to motor vehicle and transfer both the cars to yourself. Then you can either keep them, sell them, junk them, or whatever you want to do with them, you know.
Okay.
And unless you're just going to sell them for scrap metal, which case you probably don't even need to bother with the title. But, you know, it depends, you know, what you're planning to do with them.
Okay. So the
surrogate court, or you can go online. So the documents you're looking for is called a small estate administration. And as Harry said, the filing fee is only $1. Mm-hmm. And you can actually get the forms at the surrogate's office. They won't give you any legal advice, but they'll give you the forms. Or you can go on the New York courts website. There's a website for New York courts. And you can actually download the forms and the instructions on that website.
Okay.
And I've had clients, I don't know about Saratoga County, but I've had clients who've gone into the clerk's office, and, you know, the people who work in the clerk's office, if there's something you're not sure how to fill it out, they might help you, just tell you what you should put in there, what number or what name or something, if you're not sure that you have it. And they'll look everything over, and you probably can do it yourself without a lawyer, you know.
Right.
Then you have to go to motor vehicle. That's the hardest part. Is then you got to go to motor vehicle and get in line and then do the transfers. But, you know.
Okay.
So then there's a whole set of motor vehicle forms you have to fill out. Yeah.
Because I didn't know whether to just transfer one and then, as I said, let the other one use it and let it just die. So that was my.
Well, you can.
It's worth it. Really, for a dollar, it's worth it. You know, to go to.
I'd try that first, because then you have more flexibility to do something with both the vehicles instead of letting them sit there. But, you know.
Sell it or what, before the 3 years or what have you.
Sure.
They're in good condition. Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right, we're going to take our break right here. It's 8:30. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston.
Our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back.
The second half hour. I beat you to it, Harry.
Did you want me to jump in, too?
I did. Go ahead,
no,
man.
I've been talking too much. You talk second half hour. I've been talking too much. I'm going to be quiet now for a while.
So if you want to be the second caller in the second half of the show, the phone number is going to be 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Because we already have our first caller. It's Bob from Clifton Park.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Hello?
What can we help you with?
I have a question. Once a will is executed, is that made public or recorded someplace where it can be seen?
It is not. Once a will is signed, in our office anyway, we keep the original will in our vault. Some people will take their original wills, they'll put it in their safety deposit box. It doesn't become public record. It doesn't go anywhere. The only time wills generally get filed with the court before someone passes away is if there's a law firm that basically goes out of business, right? So the rules are if you're going to terminate your business, you have to notify all of the people that you have original wills for. And if you can't get a hold of those people, then those original wills have to be filed with the surrogate court in whatever county it is. So that would be the only reason that someone's will would be at the courts before they passed away.
Okay, after they pass away, what happens?
So if someone passes away and they have assets that are individually in their name and we have to probate the will, right, then it becomes public record. You would be able to go to the surrogate court and you'd be able to see it and you would see exactly who gets what and who the executor is and everything. So it doesn't become public record until it's been probated with the court after the person passes.
But then it's a public record. It's a public record. Okay. That's why people use trust.
That's why people use trust. Is that viewable online?
It is not viewable online, no. You would have to go to the surrogate's court office to view it. Even we can't get documents like that online. You have to go there and do it yourself.
Okay.
No.
Thank you very much.
You can get deeds.
And have a nice fourth.
You're welcome. You have a great weekend, too.
Thank you. Bye now.
You're right, Harry. You can get deeds online, but you can't
get deeds and mortgages online. I mean, you can go online in the county clerk's office in most counties, and you know, you can see how big a mortgage your neighbor has on their house. You know, and the deeds and stuff. But no, surrogate's court records are not available online, I think. But, you know, you can. I mean, I guess anybody could go down. I don't know how they handle it. I guess anybody could go down and you know, pay the photocopy charge and get a copy of your will. It's one of the reasons people use trust now to pass property on death rather than wills, because they're private. A trust, when you die and your property is in a trust, it doesn't get filed anywhere. You know, if the will had to be probated and it was a poor will, you'd have to file the trust along with the will. But you know, if you follow our recommendations, we would never probably have to probate your will, and therefore it's entirely a private situation within your family. It's nobody's business where your money's gone when you die, you know? So
exactly. Well, that's
anyway.
Why the goal is when we meet with clients to tell them that everything should be joint or have a beneficiary. And a lot of people don't realize that if you have an account at a bank, you can actually go into the bank. If you don't want to make your kids co on it, you can make it transfer on death. So you go into the bank and you tell them you want it transfer on death to whomever, and they'll put that designation on the account. And then whenever you pass away, you can just go, the person who's the beneficiary can just go in with the death certificate and collect it. And that way you don't have to go through probate. So if everything's joint or has a beneficiary, like your retirement accounts, your life insurance accounts, or it's in a trust, then hopefully we never have to go through the courts and all this stuff doesn't become public record.
I had a client come in yesterday. I have a client who passed away about 3 weeks ago. His widow is living in assisted living. There are three of them. They all live in different. He lives like in New Hampshire or someplace like that. He came in. I had done a trust for his parents like 15 years ago. All right, their house had been in the trust. Okay, they subsequently sold the house and put the money from the sale of the house in the trust. He had a couple of very large IRA accounts. Well, his wife is the primary beneficiary, and his three children are the contingent beneficiaries. And everything else, all their other bank accounts were in joint name with the wife. Well, guess what? I don't have to probate this person's will. Because everything, we set up everything to avoid a probate proceeding. The wife will roll over, then we'll tell them that she'll name new beneficiaries. She'll name the three kids. She'll put all of her accounts payable on death that are not in the trust to her three children. And the money that's in the trust, because the trust says automatically it's there for the rest of her life, she has access to the money in the trust if she needs it. And on her death, it'll get split in three equal shares among the kids. Now, if we had to probate those two wills in the surrogates court, you're probably looking at least $10,000, $15,000 per estate to do a court-supervised probate proceeding. You know, I mean... It's avoidable, people, and you will be saving an awful lot of money for your family and your relatives by going through these processes and learning about. This is why it's important, and Debbie, I'll do this again, you know, to listen to our webinars and our client appreciation event that's coming up pretty soon, because it's important to start learning about these things so you can become a little familiar with them. And, you know, it's very normal to have some hesitancy. You know, what's a trust? I don't know about trusts. They sound complicated. And that's a normal human reaction. So get online, sign up for our webinar, and we'll be there to give you information, and we're always available to answer your questions. Right, Deb?
Right. And a lot of the webinars, actually all of the webinars that we've done since this started back in March of last year, there's one of each that are on our website. So if you went to www.herzoglaw.com and you click on the link for the webinars, you can actually watch the webinars at your leisure, right? There's wills versus trusts. There's what to do when a loved one dies. There's aging in place, estate ending the confusion for estate planning. There's all kinds of different webinars on there. You can just download, watch them at your leisure, get your snacks, get your drinks, and watch them and get information. It's also good. A lot of my clients have actually told their kids about the webinars and said, hey, you said you didn't understand what I've done. Here, go and watch this webinar on the Herzog website so you'll understand. And then if you have questions, then they would be able to help you with the questions that you have. So it's a great opportunity to educate yourself and educate your family.
Right, and we got another 20 minutes left of the show, so if you want to be a caller, here's the number, 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900.
So I wanted to do a plug for the Seroptimus Secret Garden Tour in Saratoga is actually next Sunday, the 11th. From 11 a.m. to 5. So it's a great opportunity. Those of you that have never been on the Secret Garden Tour for Seroptimus, it's awesome. So what we do is we set up the tour. It's different gardens that are around Saratoga and the Ballston Spa area, and it's self-guided. So you get your ticket, and then you can decide which garden you want to go to first, and you go through and look at all the beautiful flowers. And this is your chance to, like, sneak behind people's houses, right? People that, you know, you always drive by their house, and you're like, wow, I wonder what it looks back there with all their Ooh. Gardens. And this is the opportunity. As a matter of fact, there's one street on Ludlow, which most of you are familiar with because it's, like, right off of, you can actually walk to the track from there. There, we actually have three houses on Ludlow, within walking, right? So you can just like hit all three of those at the same time, and these are amazing gardens. And it's just a great opportunity to walk through gardens. The tickets are only $25 when you purchase in advance, right? they're $30 on the day of the tour. You can actually get them online at the Seroptimus Saratoga website, or you can go to like North Shire Books or Lifestyles or Cudney's, and you can actually buy the tickets. So it's a great opportunity. Hopefully we'll have some good weather next Sunday. And come on out and see the beautiful gardens in Saratoga.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Any of those fancy-dancy houses up on North Broadway on the tour this year?
No, those particular houses. We try not to repeat the gardens, right? So we try to get new gardens every year. So there's a lot of beautiful gardens on the tour. And like I said, you can go on our website. There's actually a link to watch a recording of a presentation that talks about the gardens that's on our website for Seroptimus. So you can kind of get an idea about what you're in store for. It's amazing. The gardens are absolutely amazing. And you would be shocked. Like, you see this house in the front and you think, oh, whatever. And then you walk in the back and it's like, oh my gosh. You know, very cool.
Excellent. Anyway. So all of you out there should be aware, I think we've been talking about this, that the new New York short form power of attorney is out and up and running, and we've been using it since the those of you who may or may not know, the state legislature changed, thank heavens, and substantially shortened up the power of attorney form that we've been burdened with using for the last 10 years. And so I think, what are we down to, about 7 pages now instead of 14?
I think it's 3 pages shorter than the one we had before.
Okay. Well, it's still the short form is still a misnomer, but it's better than it was. And it's far more streamlined. It is also, without regard to its length, it is far less complicated to execute and sign than the old one was. In the old one, by heavens, you had to initial it about 4 or 5 different places. You had to write stuff in, and then you had to have it signed twice, notarized, witnessed. Now, you still have to have it notarized and witnessed, but the number of places where you have to sign an initial is substantially reduced because the confusion surrounding this document for the last, I mean, really, it's almost 12 years, since 2009, has been really confounding. Not only our clients, but everybody in New York who signs one of these things. So everybody now who's signing documents, we're using the new shorter, I wouldn't call it the short form, but it's the shorter form power of attorney. And those of you who have the gargantuan form might want to come in and update it and get rid of that monstrosity that's taking up paper in your estate plan document folder.
Harry, Debbie, we have another caller. We have Marie in East Greenbush.
Good morning, Marie.
Hi there.
Good morning. I get a small paycheck from my husband's employer when he passed away. My question is, can I put that in my trust?
So you get a paycheck every month, every week?
Every month.
So, and it's money that he would have earned, right? So it's payable to you?
Yes.
Okay. You can put it in your trust if you want to. It's that every time you put a deposit into your trust, that specific amount is going to have its own separate look back. If you're talking about an irrevocable trust, it doesn't affect the assets that are already in there. But yeah, you could totally put it in there if you wanted to.
Okay, now they take tax out of it, so nobody can get penalized, right, if they take it out for taxes?
Well, so you're talking about the net amount of the check. So let's just say it's a $200 check, and they take $30 worth of taxes out, so you're going to take that $170 check, and you're going to put it into an account in the name of your trust.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
Once it's in the trust, it starts the 5 years to be protected. So if you wanted to take that money back out, what we would have to do is we'd have to do what's called a partial revocation that everybody would have to sign off to take that money back out. So if that's your walking around money that you're going to use to buy something or go on a trip, that's not money that you want to put into the trust. If it's extra slush money, then yeah, put it in an account in the name of the trust.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Enjoy your show.
Have a good weekend.
Okay,
well, thank you.
Thanks for listening. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Now, the money that she is, she's receiving either a paycheck or some type of pension benefit, and so the company, the employer who's paying it, they're taking out the federal and state taxes.
Right.
And then she'll get either a W-2 or a 1099 at the end of the year, and she'll pay the income taxes on that money, not the trust, right? Because our trusts don't pay taxes. In other words, and this is confusing to a lot of people, if you have investment assets in your trust, let's say they earn $10,000 of dividends and interest and capital gains in the year, your trust has to file, it's supposed to file a tax return, but it's really an informational return, because under the income tax laws, the trusts that we use are called grantor trusts, G-R-A-N-T-O-R, which means that although your trust has received this income and dividends, because the trust says you're entitled to take all the income out of it if you want to, the income is taxed at your individual level rather than at the trust level. And so the trust would file an information return, and you don't even, you can fill these things out yourself, because you don't actually fill out the tax form. You write on the tax form in April, next April, see the attached, we call it a grantor trust information statement. And it simply says the name of my trust, the taxpayer ID number for my trust, the beneficiary are who? Me and my wife are the beneficiaries of our trust while we're alive. Here's our Social Security numbers, and we're going to pay the taxes on all this taxable income on our 1040. Then the IRS can process a return. They can cross-check the tax ID number for the trust to see whether you actually reported the income on your 1040, and it's done. It's done. It's very simple, actually. Most people can do these trust tax returns themselves without even an accountant or a bookkeeper. And even if you need to use an accountant or a bookkeeper, the cost of filling them out shouldn't be a whole lot. Plus, Debbie, we give you every year our clients can call the office in January, February, and we give them all the instructions and the forms for free. We just, we'll email them to you or send them out in the mail. To try to help you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great opportunity for people to get the information. And once you look at it, and if you say, yeah, this is above my pay grade, then you can go to an accountant and have it done.
Right.
And if not, it's fairly easy to figure out. And it's funny because sometimes I have people's accountants that call me and say, hey, can you send me your tax packet so I make sure that I do these people's taxes right? I'm like, sure, no problem. Here's the packet. Through doing it. And again, if you're our client and we've done your trust, wait till end of January, 1st of February, we'll have the packet together. You call Stacy, mm-hmm. and we'll mail it out to you. We don't automatically mail it out every year, but that's kind of jumping ahead, Harry. That's like, almost 6 months away?
Oh, it's 9 months till you have to file a return, because we've got 6 months left in the year. And the return
that's
isn't until April 15th.
Harry, so. Debbie, we have another caller. We have Maria in Loudonville.
Good morning, Maria.
Yes, hello. This is Maria.
Hello.
Hi, Maria. Yes, you're on the air. We certainly can, loud and clear. How can we help you?
Maria? Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, Maria. I'm calling on behalf of, I have a son, and he and his wife, they haven't been married too long, but she's pretty... legal to me.
Hello?
All right, and
she's pretty what? You're cutting in and out a little bit.
They are doing something very illegal to me, and it's against the law. And I want to know if I can emancipate him, denounce him, or have a lawyer write up that he's no longer my son. I don't want him to have any connection with me whatsoever. Is that possible?
Well, it's.
Maria, you were kind of cutting in and out, and we didn't hear exactly what he was doing, but how old is your son?
He's 25, going on 26, but he has a wife, and she's not influence on him, and they want my money. I have a great deal of money that was left to me, and I know that's what they want. They have started a legal thing, and it's against me, and I just can't believe it. It is it is something, you know, when I've told anybody, they said that they've heard stories, but this is the worst one they've ever heard. They want my money, and that's the bottom line.
Are they seeking
guardianship?
You know, it isn't a guardianship. I mean, I own two homes in Florida, and I do what I want. My husband died, and they think it's a good, easy money, okay? If they can come up with anything they can. I mean, I got some in their lives, and I've just never heard of anything quite like this.
I think you can immediately get in to see a lawyer next week and discuss what's going on. Have you received any paperwork or anything from him or from a lawyer?
I have. I got it from a court, that I was in a court, and I thought, for court for what? I don't even...
But do you have a lawyer representing... Is there a lawyer representing you right now in connection with what's going on? Yes?
No, there is none. If there is not...
You need to get one... You need to get a lawyer pronto, ma'am. I mean, we can't. This is beyond what we can talk about on the radio show because it's far too complicated.
The biggest thing, can I denounce my son? Emancipate him. He's no longer.
Here's the deal. Well, he's already emancipated. He's not a minor anymore, okay? He is an adult, and you can disinherit him. You can make sure he's not your power of attorney or your health care proxy agent or the executor of your estate. But, you know, you can't divorce your kids. You can divorce your spouse, but you can't divorce your kids. You can disinherit them, however, if you choose to do that. And that would be something that would have to be talked about very carefully with you, with a lawyer, either in our firm or a lawyer of your choice. And you could certainly schedule an appointment to come in and discuss this. But we can't give you advice over the radio. We can just give you general information. And my advice to you is on Tuesday morning, you need to make an appointment with a lawyer and come in and sit down and discuss this and bring all the paperwork that you've received because you need representation with whatever's going on.
Yeah, it's very difficult to be able to give advice over the phone. So if you want to give our office a call on Tuesday, I keep forgetting we're not open Monday, the phone number is 518-465-7581, and they can put you through to one of the people that are doing scheduling, and they can put time on one of our calendars. Or if there's sounding like the situation, it sounds like it may be a guardianship, or it may be something that you might need a family law attorney for, as opposed to an estate planning attorney. Excellent questions. And I think, do we have time for one more caller, Ben?
We do. We probably have a time for a quick caller if they decide to get in at 476-5900. Area code 518.
Yeah, there you go. Sure. That would be a great thing. So give us a call at 518-476-5900. You can be our last caller for the holiday weekend. So do you have any big plans for the holiday weekend, Harry?
No, not really. No. Hanging out, doing some errands and stuff like that. I don't know. We have a tremendous amount of unpacking to do because we've recently moved to a different dwelling, and so we're doing a lot of that. But we'll just be, you know, kicking around. I don't know if there's fireworks. Well, they're having fireworks at the mall this year. I won't go down there, but. Actually, you can come up here to our office at Corporate Woods, and you can look out the back window and see the Empire State Plaza. So we could do that.
I didn't even know that. Good to know. The ones in Saratoga, they have postponed because of the weather.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they'll reschedule them, and it'll be, you know, fun. But so we only have a few minutes left, and I wanted to throw in a quick scenario from this week, seeing as we don't have a caller. So I have a gentleman that called me. He lives in Connecticut. His sister lived here. No spouse, no kids, no parents are alive, no will. And so he wanted to know what he could do, and it's just him and his sister. And I told him he would have to bring an administration proceeding in order to be appointed so that he could sell his sister's house.
Right, right. And that's the house is here in New York, yeah.
It's in New York, yeah.
Yeah, it's she has already passed away, so we can't put in a trust. No.
Nope, she's gone. She's gone. She's been gone for, I guess she died in June.
Yeah.
So there was no planning done whatsoever.
That's a problem. An administration proceeding, you know, the problem with administration proceeding where there's no will or anything like that is if the sister, in other words, if there's other brothers and sisters who are living or dead or whatever, I mean, maybe there aren't, you'd have to get those people involved or their children if they're deceased. And the other downside of an administration proceeding is because there's no will, the court might require the brother to post a bond, you know, equal to the value of the house if he's the administrator. I mean, it can be waived, but see, in a will, when we do a will, I think every will we do, there's a sentence in there that says, you know, I specifically declare that my executor does not have to post a bond or other obligation to secure, you know, the his duties, which means a bond is just an insurance policy, right, that an insurance company issues that says if this executor steals money from the estate, we'll cover the losses, okay? That's what a bond is. It's an insurance policy. But these things they're not free. You know, you got to buy them. And every year that the estate is open, you got to pay a premium. So it's an unnecessary expense for most estates. I mean, if you don't trust the executor, you want your executor to post a bond, you probably ought to think about picking a different person to be your executor, because if you don't trust them, you shouldn't name them. So the same as administrator. And in this case, it sounds like this guy is probably the sole heir at law and distributee anyway. So it could be the court would waive the bond, but sometimes they won't. Yeah, what?
Yeah, he has a sister that's alive. The other brother had predeceased. But I guess none of them are in very good health. So when I was talking to them, I'm like, get in quick and get it done. You guys have a great weekend. Happy 4th of July.
Take care. We'll talk next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.